ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The recent Louvre heist of multi-million dollar jewels is the most recent example in the history of high-profile thefts. You might remember back in 1990, two men disguised as police officers entered Boston's Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum and stole 13 artworks, which included Vermeer's The Concert and Rembrandt's Storm on the Sea of Galilee. It remains the largest art heist in history, worth about a total of $500 million. And no, the works have never been recovered. So where do they go? And what's the market like for them? It's not like the thieves can put them back up on Facebook Marketplace, is it? So is there much of a market for these types of stolen items, be they an emerald and diamond necklace that Napoleon gave to his second wife Marie-Louise, as in the Louvre theft, or a priceless Rembrandt? Henry Mulholland is a senior art specialist with auction house Deutscher and Hackett. Joins us this evening. Henry, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
G'day, Phil. Again, thanks for calling.
Yeah, no, not too bad. Yes, it's sort of fascinating. It's sort of the stuff of celebrity crime novel, crime fiction, isn't it?
The Pink Panther, you come jump straight to mind.
Yeah, exactly. What happens here? Do people steal to order, or do they steal opportunistically? I think
that's right. Both. You just don't know. There's sort of four main sort of reasons for theft, and one is sort of ransom. You take the thing, and then you put up a ransom and you threaten to destroy it. There's people that do it for political reasons, like the weeping woman down in Melbourne, I think in the 80s, when it was a bunch of art students that were, I can't quite remember the circumstances, but it was something to do with funding of the arts. And, of course, that painting was returned once they attracted enough attention to their cause. And then you get the small-time thieves that just think naively that they probably can make a buck out of it. And then obviously you've got people with mental health issues.
I mean, the Mona Lisa was stolen, wasn't it, famously?
It was indeed. And I don't know how unhinged he was, but he was an employee of the Louvre, and he hid in the cupboard as when it closed. He was like a janitor. And then in the early hours of the morning, he came out of the cupboard, took the painting and made his way out of the gallery. He was an Italian patriot, and he sort of saw himself as returning a great work of art to the people of Italy. But it turned out to be his motivation. But in the end, when they sprung him in Florence, he was actually trying to make some sort of transaction with the police that retrieved the picture. But that, of course, became the most famous painting in the world. And the funny thing about that was, at that time, I remember reading some years ago, that all of a sudden there was, because no one knew where the Mona Lisa was for those years, the other scoundrels got to work and started making copies of it. So there was all sort of people finishing up with copies of the thing, thinking they had the real one. Of course, no one knew where it was.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. That's right. It went missing for some years, didn't it? That's right.
I think it was 3 or 4 years. Yeah, that's right.
One of the things the Louvre's saying about these jewels, the Napoleonic jewels that have been stolen, is that they're, quote, to use their words, unsellable. Is that true? Presumably, that can't be right. I mean, there'll be people who are prepared to buy them, I presume, aren't there?
Yeah, so we're looking at two things. You're looking at the items if they're intact, as they were in the museum, which, of course, gives them an enormous value that is outside monetary terms. I mean, as the historical context of the things and all that, I mean, it's priceless is a word that people bandy around, but how do you price that? And then the other version is where they are actually broken up and, you know, by now quite possibly available in the Diamond District of Antwerp. But I would think that I don't know. They're sort of, you know, speculating on the motivation for this. My initial thought mischievously was that it was some oligarch sitting there with a daughter who was about to turn 21, and he's looked at the Louvre and he thinks, oh, yes, I'll have that, and sort of, you know, they were stolen to order. But then the more we hear about the sort of bungling guys, you know, they weren't exactly reservoir dogs, the guys that did it. You know, one of the guys actually dived head first into the getaway thing on the ladder with his helmet on, and they've caught them in that. But there'll be the small guys in it. You know, they've been hired to do it, and where the items are is anyone's guess. And will we ever see them again? I don't know. I mean, you would hope so for the people of France. It's
of course.
We had our own one here in Sydney back, you know, about 20 years ago or something. We had a small Dutch painting someone walked out of the Art Gallery in New South Wales with it under a coat. It was a very rainy Sunday morning, so pretty much everyone in the gallery had a coat on. And someone went in there and took the little Van Maris out of the James Fairfax Galleries. And
never come back.
And it has not been seen since. A tiny little painting by a Dutch master, probably worth about $1.5 million back then. But again, you know, that painting is widely known as a stolen work. You know, what would you do with it? It's just
so. What do you do with it? I mean, presumably there are private collectors who will pay for it.
Steal on commission. Yeah.
So if you're a thief, what you'd presumably have to have some underworld contacts, do you?
In
the art world that you're in, you know, if people want to buy paintings, they deal with people like you and others, I imagine.
That's exactly right. So, you know, I basically field phone calls all day. Well, not all, that's not all I do, but, you know, but the first thing, you know, I ask the questions. Mm. Oh, g'day, Henry, how are you going? Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, whereabouts are you calling from? Oh, that doesn't matter. Oh, straight away. Well, there's an alarm bell. I said, oh, what have you got? I said, oh, I've got a Margaret Preston. Okay, well, where did you get it? Oh, well, I'd rather not say. Well, you know, there's another alarm bell. You can tell there that it's going to be a sort of short conversation.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the paintings that we deal in, like we're a top-end auction house, and we are the last people that you're going to contact if you've got a style. That's if you've got any brains.
Mm.
We're the last people you're going to contact because with the databases and things nowadays, everything, you know, like everything is recorded. I mean, sure, there are a lot of really minor things, and I'm talking like rats and mice, you know, a couple of hundred here, a couple of thousand there, in places that deal in a lot of items. But that's certainly not us. And as I say, we ask the question. So,
Providence, that's true. Providence is everything, I imagine. So you have got to prove a chain of provenance, don't you?
That's right.
That to sell it legitimately. But in this instance, how would there ever be I mean, there's no certificate.
Well, it's actually very good provenance.
You don't know it's, I mean, if you're, it's, I know, but if it's being traded around the place, how do you know it's from the Louvre? Well, there's nothing on it that says this is from the Louvre.
That's right. They go back to my earlier point when they were knocking up copies of the Mona Lisa.
That's right.
Back in the early 1913 or 12, whatever it was. Those things are well identifiable. Like if somebody walked in here with that today, I would know. I said, oh, yeah, right, yeah, okay. Let's sit down and have a chat about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to know. And, of course, the very famous forger during the Second World War, whose name just escapes, but it was something like Van Maris or Van Meren, and he famously sold fakes to the Nazis. And they finished up catching up with him, you know, once they realised. But,
I'm trying to think of that famous Leonardo, the was bought by, I think, Salvador Mundi, the saviour of the world, which was bought privately.
Bought at auction, yes, it was an auction, yeah.
Yeah, private. So you couldn't obviously put this thing up for auction, could you? So
well, it did go to auction from memory, yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, that painting did, yeah. So I'm just trying to think of the market for people with a lot of money who and how they might go about obtaining something like this. It would be quite difficult, I imagine. So, but though this market must exist, though, because, as you say, there are items that have been stolen and never returned.
Perhaps so. You know, like back in the day, there used to be myths about bunkers under deserts with Monets and Picassos and all that. And I don't know. You know, perhaps there is a world where that goes on. But I think, like in the case of the Van Maris at the Art Gallery in New South Wales, I mean, I just think that was some sort of opportunistic prankster, and I have, you know, ideally hope that the painting is still out there somewhere and will eventually make its way back to the art gallery. But as far as buying them goes, you know, we certainly deal with high net worth individuals, and they're not idiots.
No.
You're not going to get they are they're very, very serious art collectors. And, you know, there's no way they would go anywhere near anything like this.
Mm.
And again, there's so much sort of publicity around a picture, and it's unlike the jewels, like those are jewels, could be, what those things are broken up, then they're going to be fairly anonymous items, aren't they? I mean, I don't think they're going to be running.
They'd be worth much less broken up, wouldn't they?
They would.
As individual rubies or individual diamonds. I mean, the diamond market, as we know, has collapsed a lot because of various reasons, but you would think as individual stones, they'd be not so much a dime a dozen, but much less valuable than in the piece that they are affixed, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, people that steal, you know, let's speculate that someone did steal this on commission. They obviously value the thing enormously, so they're not going to hurt it. Do you know what I mean? It's like a little Van Meris. You're not gonna paint over it. You're not gonna hurt it. You know, that's if you've got any sense. You know, that's if you are a genuine aesthete lover.
I mean, there are private collectors everywhere, aren't there? Are there any really famous things that are still not? You mentioned the little one from the Art Gallery of New South Wales. I mean, I'm trying to rack my brains too to think of famous things that have been stolen and never recovered.
The ones you cited in your introduction there.
The Vermeer.
Yeah, that's right. Well, as to my knowledge, I mean, I'm not terribly familiar with that case, but I think you said that, there they are. There's probably things out there. There's art registers and that around the world. And I had a bit of a look at them in advance of our conversation, but unfortunately most of them got paywalls and I was just like, oh, God, you know, you're going down a rabbit hole there. But, quick, just the Google of the Van Maris.
But you say yourself, you've evinced the conversation about the Margaret Preston. You reckon you've been offered stolen goods before, or goods that have come into possession, to people's possession, through questionable means?
Look, the guy came in here a couple of years ago, and he had, and this is an interesting point to make because old people are pretty vulnerable. And apparently, the lady had died, and they were emptying her house out, and everything was going into a skip. And this guy was the skip driver. And he, he saw a picture that he thought was in a nice frame and he snaffled it. Anyway, he came in here, and met me in person. I think he might have rang and made an appointment. And we had a bit of a chat and I said, and I was sort of conflicted because I'm thinking, has this guy scavenged this or is the story of the skip genuine
he told you that he was a skip driver found it in his skip, right?
It was a nice frame. I can't remember what the picture was. It might have been a little Lindsay watercolor or something, but again, it wasn't worth a lot of money, and it's certainly something that it's something that we would be unlikely to handle anyway because it was just simply too minor. But for the sake of the exercise, I was a bit conflicted about the guy because he's a really nice guy and a hard worker, and he had this picture. But the idea of the old lady's house being cleared out straight into a skip is just nauseating, just like, yeah. But good on him, and he saved a little Lindsay, obviously,
How would he ever sell it? Because he's, I don't know, I suppose.
Good question. Not with me.
But he'd have to establish some legal right to it as a finder's keepers thing, would he?
But it depends how much it's worth. If it's worth $1,500, then no one's going to ask too many questions, somewhere or other. But of course, the other one is, when things come to you from thrift shops. I did have a case of that. That was very profitable for the guy. He was in some country town in New South Wales, and he just happened to be in a salvo, and he noticed this little picture in a corner, and he went, ooh. And eventually he made his way to me, that was a pretty good little find. It was actually a print by a well-known female artist, Australian, a liner cut, wood cut. That paid off very handsomely for him. He paid $11 for it.
what did he sell it for?
Bit over 50.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know. It was quite a few years ago now, but again, you don't sort of, you try not to make hay out of that because someone's made a mistake, and then there's the thrift shop, and then there's the thing. So you just say,
Interesting. Interesting. Anyway, let's hope the jewels come back because
part of
French heritage and all of that. Yeah.
But I would hope so.
But there's a good chance that they may not. All right, Henry, good to talk. Thank you.
Good on you, Philip. Thanks for having me on. Bye.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.